Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Oh, how the willow boughs swoon, and freckled light dances on the lawn. I have seen the vast expanses. I have known the corners. I have hidden and explored and cast myself toward the arches and the high glass. All here in the moon underwater. Welcome ye and welcome all, from Baron to Bricklayer, from King, Queen and Candlemaker, or if you just work in finance or in an office, welcome to the Moon Underwater. We serve everyone over the age of 18 and, you know, as long as you abide by UK law, here at a fantasy pub of your own mind. I am the landlord, John Robbins, and with me, helping our guest guide their own selves through the choices of their dream pub, is the lovely regular Robin Allender. Hello, Robin.
Hello, John.
How do I find you this evening?
In good spirits.
No, sorry, how do I... I can't see you.
Oh, right, sorry, yes.
I can hear you. How do I find you?
Well, it's very dark. You have to use the power of touch.
Okay, well, there should be some lights on here at the Moon Underwater. I don't know why it's drenched in sort of the scarlet death black night all of a sudden. So I'll just... what sort of lighting do you fancy?
Well, we're on Starless and Bible Black at the moment, so what about Starless and Bible kind of yellow?
But Starless and Bible yellow?
Yeah.
Okay, and as if by magic, here we are, bathed in a beautiful yellow. It's not a sort of like a nauseating yellow. It's just sort of a pale candlelit glow.
Yeah, that's what I wanted.
And we find the Moon Underwater in very good spirits this evening, ready to accept our guest. And I don't know if you do you hear the rain outside, Rob.
Yeah, what, the rain, R-E-I-G-N?
No, this time I'm not throwing you a curveball. This time I do mean the R-A-I-N. Because it's only gone and started raining wine.
Oh, fabulous.
Which is very distressing the first time you sort of look down and see it on your skin.
Yeah.
Because you may think you're bleeding to death from the head from a blow. But actually, no, the correct realm here where the Moon Underwater is situated is raining wine in reverence to this week's guest. I should point out, if you are expecting the usual ramblings and mist from Robin and I, that is now housed in an all-new podcast home. On this very feed, we're getting straight into the meat of our guest here at the Moon and Water, even though we don't actually serve meat. Apologies for that. It's a metaphorical meat from a real person. So I think I can almost see them dusting the wine off their raincoat, if indeed you can dust liquid. but they're certainly shaking an awful lot of the liquid. And yes, looking up to the heavens for a bit of a gulp before they head in. On the threshold of the Moon Underwater, we welcome Mr. Ed Gamble. Hello, Ed!
Hello! I've brought quite a lot of meat with me, apologies.
Well, we can keep it here for the meat eaters.
Thank you, yes, that would be great.
Will it freeze?
No, it's defrosted already. You're in serious trouble if you freeze that and then defrost it again. I think we're in trouble then. Then it'll be raining something else.
What would happen to meat if you kept freezing and defrosting and freezing?
I don't think you're supposed to do that. I think you're supposed to freeze it once, max, defrost fully, and then cook and eat, rather than keeping defrosting and freezing, etc. As far as I know.
What happens if you freeze it and then freeze it again without defrosting?
Then it's double frozen. Then you can never defrost it.
Okay, okay.
That's what they did to Walt Disney.
Is it really?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, maybe that's what fossils are.
Yeah, double frozen shells.
Really,
yeah.
Hard. Welcome, Ed. It's a delight to have you in the Moon Underwater. It's been long tomps since I've dreamed that your visage would waft its way through the bottle green bay windows here at the Moon Underwater and hear the clip-clop of your high heels on the cobbled streets. Because, Ed, you are one of the great... I'm not going to say aficionados of alcohol. You're one of the few people I know who genuinely seems to appreciate the provenance, the atmosphere of a drink, the sort of setting. I've never seen you just sort of glugging lager for the sake of it.
No, I've had those days. I've been through those days. I do like to appreciate a drink. I like to make it worth it. If I'm going to have a drink, I want to drink some nice stuff. But then also, I do sometimes wonder whether my sort of acting as an aficionado and truly trying to appreciate alcohol is just a wonderful sort of excuse for still drinking quite a lot in my mid-30s.
Do you think it does help you drink a bit less if you go, okay, I'm not going to drink every night this week, but if I do, I'm gonna get a really nice bottle of red.
I'm going to crack open something nice, definitely, for sure.
Because you're not going to glug down like two bottles of sort of vintage red, are you, of an evening? Or are you?
No, a bottle, yeah, perhaps. Yeah. And also because my wife isn't really a wine drinker, quite often I do have to drink the whole bottle or drink half a bottle and then sort of just leave it, which is... it's very hard.
Do you ever find that, say you've bought a bottle of fancy wine, say you're looking at, you know, a £20 bottle of wine.
Sure.
And you drink half of it and leave the rest of the next day, that somehow the value decreases in your mind? So you'd sort of quite happily use that sort of 300ml of Chateau Neuf du Pape in a stew the next day?
Yeah, just whack it in a pan.
Quickly becomes cooking wine.
Yeah, feed it to the cat.
Often it tastes nicer the next day, though.
It is better. It's quite often better the next day. But then how do you store it? That was a big thing. My wife bought me a Christmas present once, which was a very subtle nod to maybe you shouldn't drink a whole bottle of wine, which was one of those decanters, but you pour it in and then you press them down and they sort of seal off all of the air.
Oh, yeah.
And then you sort of pour them and they've got like a little gluggy thing that's supposed to air. I think it's all bullshit. But she brought this basically to say, you can drink half a bottle and then you can put it in this and you could leave it maybe 2 days before you drank the rest of it. And that is now essentially a very pretty ornament on our mantelpiece.
I've got one of those pumps with the little rubber things that go in the top.
That's for something else, John.
and I hope it's working for you.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, I'm not actually convinced they extend the life of a bottle of wine very... I'm not sure that they extend the life of a bottle of wine that much.
No. As far as I've been told, the best way to do it is to put the cork back in and then whack it in the fridge, and then you've probably got 2 or 3 days in a bottle of red.
Well, also, did you know the better the wine, the longer it keeps?
I did not know that.
Yes, that's been a very good tip that Dan Atkinson, comedian and writer and producer Dan Atkinson, he's a big wine buff, and his dad, I might have mentioned this before, but every year when Decanter sort of bring out their picks, he does a spreadsheet of all of the Decanter top 100 wines that are available in the different supermarkets. But apparently, yeah, the more money you spend on a wine, the longer it will keep. So sort of a really nice, I don't know, I would never spend more than 20 quid in a bottle of wine, probably. But were you to get like a £40 bottle of wine, that might keep for a week. Whereas a sort of a £4.99 bottle of white, you've really got to be drinking it that evening or the next morning.
Yeah, you've got to be necking it at the till, really.
Yeah. It's like a second hand. It's like a new car. As soon as you drive it off the forecourt,
immediately
it begins
loses
to
value.
Decrease. Yeah.
But Ed, speaking of fancy wines, as a judge on Great British Menu, what was the kind of boozing like on that show? Because sometimes you were given a drink with the meal.
Yes. Yeah, that happens now and again. And I actually, potentially, one of my wine choices is one of the wines that we were given on the Great British Menu. The boozing is not, it's not furious, because we do start eating at 10 a.m.
Oh.
On judging days. But quite often, like, maybe a drink will arrive with a course at 11 a.m. And my role on that show is very much total consumer. I will eat everything and drink everything that's put in front of me. Tom Kerridge doesn't drink, so that prevents him from doing it. And we'll say things like, "Don't you got to get that away from me, otherwise I'm going to go mad."
I mean, Tom Kerridge, who famously came on Off Menu and for his drink choice asked for, was it a slab of Stella? Was that the word he used?
Yeah, 24 cans of Stella.
I love him.
He's brilliant. And he said he stopped drinking because it goes wild when he drinks. So he made the very sensible decision to stop. So he's obviously not having any. And then Nisha will have a couple of sips and just go crazy. So I'm the one drinking the stuff. But yeah, occasionally they throw a little drink in there, which feels like bribery, really.
Right. But you can't just sort of go, do you mind if I just have a can of Foster's or something like that?
Yeah, you can't order a drink.
Right.
They very much paired a drink with the meal. But it's normally to do with like the theming and the setting and just to make it all feel a bit more coherent. But you can't really judge them on that because they've not cooked the drink.
No.
I often wonder on like MasterChef when MasterChef the professionals, when they're cooking with wine, are they allowed to sort of drink as they go? Because it's quite a like a chef-y thing, you know, I'll just have a little sip of the red while I sort of, it's, you know, it's quite common sort of visual language in the world of chefs on TV that they have a little sip. But I wonder if at any point Greg will sort of come in and go, you've done two-thirds of that bottle.
I guess if it's going really wrong, maybe that would be the way to do it. If you know you've already burnt something and there's no way of pulling it back, you just have the rest of the bottle and have a good time, right? Deliver a curry or something.
If ever I go on Celebrity MasterChef, or just regular MasterChef, why not?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not going to have me on Celebrity. Just get on there any way you can. I'll just get absolutely Sauvignon Blanc'd.
Well, maybe that's what happened the other... Do you remember the other year where they had to edit a contestant out of MasterChef?
The ghost chef.
That was one of the weirdest TV... That was weirder than Series 3 of Twin Peaks, watching that.
I've asked so many people what went on there. I've done so many texts to various people who work within food, within TV, just trying to find out what happened to the mystery lost contestant in MasterChef, and no one can tell me.
That's amazing.
I met Marcus Waring at the Oval watching a test match.
Right.
And I would have asked him if, when he walked into the room, because I've watched so much of Marcus Waring, I went, "Oh, hey there," as if he was my friend.
Right.
And he looked at me like, "Oh, have we met?" And I was like, "Oh, fuck, you've just said hello to Marcus Waring, like, you know, you know each other." So I then sort of like, I sort of just moved away and didn't speak to him. But I would have asked him who the mystery chef was. To anyone who doesn't know this story, there was an episode of MasterChef The Professionals that went out. And in the round they were filming, they always have four chefs competing for a place in the next round. And it became, it was, what was, the thing is, before you knew what the situation was, there was just a sense of something was wrong.
Yeah.
And it began to dawn on you watching it, oh, there's only three chefs in this round, but usually there's four. And they're referring to, like, the fact that there's four. But you're only seeing little sort of corners and angles of this other chef's unit. And every so often there was, like, a hand in the background.
Yeah.
And it turns out no reference was made to this in the show.
There was like a slate or something saying...
A little card at the end.
Yeah. Maybe it was just like group psychosis and there were only ever three there. And there was this just shadowy figure.
They did a shot of... You know, they do that shot of them all walking. They'd obviously had to zoom in to crop out the other guy. It's so weird.
But I went on a TV forum and rumours abounded from... The chef, like, committed some crime after filming. Or one person said he knew a cameraman that told him that he told Marcus Waring to fuck off. But I just think that sounds... I mean, it sounds brilliant.
I suspect that might... I mean, in the sort of heat of the MasterChef kitchen, I'm sure that sort of thing might have happened now and again.
Well, it happened on Great British Menu once. Johnny Mountain. I think his name's Johnny Mountain.
It was their fault for letting a wrestler in.
I think his name's Johnny Mountain. He did a meal. It was like a menu based on sustainability. And he did this seashore, I think it was the fish course. And Marcus Waring gave it 2 out of 10.
Oh, no.
And he swore, ran out of the judging room, and there was a big poster of himself, and he just sort of like karate kicked it down and left.
Really?
I do not remember. Well, and that was it, and he never came back?
Never came back.
Wow.
He karate kicked a poster of himself.
Himself, yeah.
Well, that sounds like it could be our man, to be fair.
Yeah. It might have been Johnny Mountain, yeah.
Yeah.
So, Ed, back to the matter in hand. Before we kit out your dream pub, let me just say 3 words to you. The hotel bar discuss.
Now, Robin, you'll want to hear this. myself and John have a long-running argument, which I will say, I hope you know this, John, is broadly designed to try and annoy you, that I say I prefer hotel bars to pubs. Now, this is from being on tour for a long time and finishing a show. And the last thing I want to do after I finish a tour show is go to a nearby pub. I don't necessarily want to look my audience in the eye afterwards, just in case I can see deep into their soul and realise they didn't enjoy something. I don't want to be in a busy atmosphere straight after a show. And the hotel bar is the best place to be. Two big glasses of nondescript red in a hotel bar, straight to bed. That's how I feel.
I understand the allure of a hotel bar for sure. It's anonymous. It's a sort of a non-space. Is that what they're called, Rob?
Oh, you mean like a liminal space, kind of, as people
say?
Like,
yeah, hotels and airports and shopping centres are sort of like, I don't know how to say it any more than non-space, but they're like, there's something quite relaxing about the repetition and the fact that your room is identical to the room next door, and the fact that they're sort of kitted out with artwork that sort of pleases no one but also offends no one.
Yeah.
So they're otherworldly places where you can feel just like you don't exist. That's what I love about a hotel. I can lock myself in and say, no one knows I'm here. I might not exist.
Just, that's not why I like it.
But for me, it's the lack of choice of drinks. The thing with like your audience is usually we'll be gigging in places where there's 4 or 5 pubs. Most people don't go to the nice pubs. They go to the near pubs.
Yeah.
As a rule of thumb, I would say. So if I do go to a nice pub and a couple of people from the audience are in there, I know that they know pubs. So I'm sort of like, good. They've come to the right pub. But I wouldn't go to I wouldn't go to an O'Neill's directly opposite the venue that was just absolutely hevo cablevo.
I think what I like about, because we tend to stay in a similar chain of hotels throughout the whole tour. And what I like is you can rely on it. And I like that on tour. I go to chain restaurants and chain hotels and you can rely on it. And it's always the same because the audiences are so variable. And you never know what you're going to get. So I like that sort of reassurance of being like, we're going back to the hotel bar. I'm going to have... on the last tour, me and my tour manager agreed we could have 3 drinks after a show and we'd be fine the next day. But now we're a couple of years older and we've had to reduce it to 2, sadly.
Have you really?
Yeah.
So this is separate. This is a separate bonus.
Mm.
But you come back to your hotel bar after a really nice show, but you're tired. You don't have to be up early for a train the next day. You've got the next day off. What would be your dream drink to see waiting for you on the bar that your tour manager's ordered for you?
Well, I guess dream drink is different to realisable drink.
Yes, dream hotel, chain hotel drink.
Well, I normally go for a red wine. A go-to when you don't know the wine list or you've got no one telling you this is fantastic or this is good and telling you stories about it or whatever. I always just go for, normally, Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
It's light enough to just have a couple of glasses of it. You don't need food with it to sort of, you know, help balance the flavours or anything like that. You can sip it, you can enjoy it. 2 large glasses of Pinot Noir, good night.
Couple of pints of Pinot,
lovely.
I remember on the tour where I supported John a few years ago and we played in Salford And we were in the hotel, and it's very close to Old Trafford, isn't it? That where we were staying. And I went down to the bar quite late after we got back from to get a pizza and a pint to take up to my room. And the hotel was completely rammed with all these like football fans getting up in the lift with just a pizza on a plate and a pint in a really busy lift. It was quite a fond memory.
The plate makes that sadder for some reason.
Yeah, it's very Partridge kind of thing. Got your big plate, Alan, kind of thing, yeah.
Hello fans of Pub and Pint. I'm Jess Phillips, an MP, and now for the first time, a podcast host. I know that the moon underwater is used to sighing for its letters, so I think you'll love my new podcast that's all about writing letters. It's called Yours Sincerely, and in each episode I invite a guest to celebrate three people that mean the world to them. Someone they love, someone who's no longer around, and someone who doesn't realise how significant a role they've played in their lives. So with that, I'll sign off with Yours Sincerely, Jess Phillips. I hope you get to enjoy an episode of my podcast soon.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, Ed, we're going to discuss perhaps the looks of your dream pub or hotel bar. But first off, we need to get that bar kitted out. So what are your first two draft options, please?
Now, I'm not sure if we're going to fall out over beer. But you two, I think you're beer heads. You appreciate beer. You like sort of quite traditional beers, would that be fair to say? Having listened to the podcast?
It's quite a broad church,
it's,
really, isn't
it's
it?
It's a broad... There's no bad choices, because, you know, if you like... Robin likes a foaming pint of Stella more than life itself. There's nothing wrong with that. Stella isn't bad. It's just it's just very popular, which is probably why... It's probably because it suits a lot of people. It doesn't suit my palate, but I would never... If someone says... If I was getting someone a drink and I said, oh, what do you fancy? I'll get a pint of Stella. I'd never go, what? Afraid of the dark stuff, lager boy. I really didn't like that advertising campaign. It's just like, well, it's just a different drink, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, it's quite gatekeeper-y, that kind of thing, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Mm. That's not necessarily the way I'm going to go with it. This is not why I'm worried about your reaction to it, because I can manage, if I'm drinking beer, I'd say 2 to 3 beers. I used to neck lager. I used to be able to drink 10 pints plus. Can't do that anymore, get too full. So now, if I'm having a beer, it's going to be 2 to 3 beers max, unless it's Guinness, when that's 6 or 7 I could probably put away. And I don't know why, because that fills you up even more normally. So when I drink a beer, it's normally quite sort of wacky. I don't know, we've not really discussed this before, John, but I really like sour beer.
Okay.
I like sort of quite mad, and the sort of weirder the better, really, and I've got really into it in the last couple of years. So I think the first one I'm going to go for is there's a brewery in Edinburgh called Vault City Brewing Company, just Vault City Brewing, And they specialise in sours. And they do a lot of like big percentage sours with all sorts of flavours in them. Like they release a new batch of sours every Sunday. And they've done some that I didn't really enjoy that had like marshmallow in it and stuff. But they do session sours, and the one I'm going to go for is the Cloudy Lemonade Session Sour, which is properly sour, properly lemony, really delicious, really makes you pucker your face up. It's just fantastic.
Just looking this up in my mind.
Vault City Brewing.
City Brewing, Cloudy Lemonade Cider. Oh, no, sorry, sour.
Is this like a can of like a 500 ml can or a bottle? Or
It did come in cans, actually. I mean, the frustrating thing I find about these really like new breweries who are doing exciting stuff and experimenting quite a lot is they do tend to release a beer a week, and then within 2 weeks you can't ever get that beer again.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I think they've just opened a tap room actually in Edinburgh. And I think the Cloudy Lemonade might be part of their core range at the tap room now. So when I go to Edinburgh, I can actually go and get it again. But they did release that one in cans. They're normally a bottles brewery, but they've just started releasing cans. In fact, I had one last night from them, an Iron Brew flavoured sour.
What?
A lot nicer than it sounds.
Yeah. Wow.
So looking at this beer, I think I would like to try it. It's between sort of 3.7 to 4.2%.
It was, 4.2, I think the one I had was, yeah.
Probably depending on whether you get it on draft or in a can or whatever. No, it's 4.2%. I think of all the sours, because I've tasted some sours, and some of them taste a bit like just a slightly dry fruit beer, which is quite nice for a pint or a half or a two-thirds. I think they probably suit quite well. I had a balsamic vinegar sour.
Oh my God.
Which is one of the worst things I've ever tasted.
Yeah, that it doesn't sound good.
It was like drinking gone off beer. It was like you're paying twice as much for something that usually you would go to the barman, "Oh sorry, I think that might be gone."
Yeah.
So it's quite weird to convince yourself that that's what you're meant to be tasting. I could give this lemonade sour a go because it looked quite refreshing, but I wonder how close it is to just sort of a dry cider. Do you like dry ciders?
I'm not really a cider guy. I find ciders generally too sweet, however dry they are, really. I think they do, actually. There's loads of residual sugar in ciders, I think. And I sort of feel that like that about beer as well, really. Like, quite often it's just a little bit too sweet, and there's too sort of, you feel like you're having a meal, whereas this... It had quite a lot of the properties of a sort of very light lemonade. I'll be honest, like it was a genuinely refreshing beer.
I'm looking on my mind a website called Untappd where people are reviewing it.
Yeah.
Someone called Dave has said, "Tasty, really sour, lots of lemon." 4.5 out of 5.
That's essentially what I've said.
Yeah.
I mean, it does what it says on the tin, literally.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not normally worried about the percentage of things, to be honest.
Really, you're not?
No, because, I mean, you guys mention it quite a lot, and I think it probably does matter with beer, but I will tell the percentage by drinking something, and then in 10 minutes' time going, well, here we go.
I guess if you're just having one or two, the percentage is sort of irrelevant, I guess. I think for me, it came from the fact that I know my sort of beer quantities are sort of 4 to 5 pints, and... Obviously, the difference between drinking a 4% beer and drinking a 5.5% beer over that many is the equivalent of drinking like an extra pint and a half or whatever, depending on it. But yeah, I guess if you're having two beers of an evening, it sort of doesn't really matter whether it's 10%.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, every single beer I've drunk over 5% I've not liked.
Really?
that's probably not a bad thing to have.
Well, the other beer I was potentially going to bring up, but it felt a little bit arrogant, was a beer that I collaborated with another brewery on, Signature Brewery, who are based in Black Horse Road, who are an amazing brewery. They do some really good stuff. But I did a gig there, and then as part of that gig, I got to come up with a beer with them, and I did a rhubarb crumble and vanilla custard sour.
Wow.
called Let's Get Eddie to Crumble.
Nice.
Very nice. I've just started drinking a bottle of Rioja that has gone.
Oh no.
It has turned. I forgot to do the little pump in the top, and I just put the pump in, so maybe the pump does work. And now I'm sad.
Oh dear.
Oh dear.
You ever heard of this? Hacienda Don Hernan Tempranillo Rioja. Sorry, mate, you're going down the sink.
Where a lot of your booze goes, doesn't it, John?
Because a lot of it does end up down the sink, I'm afraid. Yeah. Either through beer being too strong or me having a midnight epiphany.
Like when you used to smoke fags and you used to tear half the cigarette off and chuck it in the bin.
Yeah, I used to run them under the tap quite a lot as well. I'd have a couple of fags and run them under the tap, just, yeah.
Tear them up and chuck them in the bin, 2 a.m, back down in the bin, making a rollie out of the torn up fags.
I had that with food as well a lot. I threw a burger at a block of flats once.
Oh, ooh. Ed. Well, after your next draft, I'm going to ask you a question relating to that. So you've got Vault City Brewing Cloudy Lemonade Session Sour, 4.2%, which I actually want to try. Next up, please.
Next up, little bit wacky again, I'd say. It's over 5%, so I'm not sure you'd enjoy it, John. It's a McKellar beer called Caps Lock, and it's a nitro coffee IPA.
What?
Ooh, I like the sound of that.
I've not found it in this country. I had it in Copenhagen, where McKellar is based, at War Pigs, which is McKellar's barbecue restaurant and tap house. And it's fantastic. I had 2 pints of it, 6.6%. I was there with my wife and a couple of other friends, including Nish Kumar. And my wife was begging with us to not, please don't drink the 6.6% beer because we've got to go for a lovely meal this evening. And we had 2 of those, and we were pretty wazzicked after that. But it was I'd never had a beer through a nitro tap before.
Wow!
Oh, I'd like to try that. Is it called Beer Geek Nitro Breakfast?
No, but I'd imagine that's a similar sort of thing. It's called Caps Lock.
Oh, sorry, so sorry. Rob, all I can hear is you clicking like a gamer.
Oh, sorry, I'm just...
What's wrong with you, man?
I'm looking at Michaela in my mind. I'll stop using my mouse.
Use the trackpad, nature's mouse.
The trackpad of the mind.
Are you sure it's Michaela? Are you sure it's not War Pigs Brew Pub?
So that's Michaela's, that's their pub. Because they basically own half of Copenhagen, and that's in the meatpacking district, and their shops next door to that as well. Yeah,
there is you can get lots of Michaela in the UK, can't you? Some of the cans are really nice. The eye one, what's the eye one called? Two Side Eyes is called. It's really nice pale ale.
Well, they've got a couple of brew pubs in London which are fantastic. There's one in Exmouth Market, and there's one.
Is there?
Yeah, there's one more in like East London actually, which I'd highly recommend popping along to. But as far as I know, they've not brought this Caps Lock over, and I've had a lot of Starbucks. They do quite a lot of nitro cold brew coffee, where it's through this tap. And I know you guys talk about sparklers quite a lot, and I think it's a sort of similar concept, but with nitrogen rather than carbon dioxide.
What's interesting about Caps Lock is that it doesn't look like I was expecting it to. It's not sort of very dark brown or black. It looks like a beer.
Yeah, it's got that sort of almost green coffee taste. Like it's very fresh and quite light, but it's still, because it's been through that tap, it's quite creamy.
Mm.
It holds that. It's almost like John Smith-y sort of head.
Mm. I'd quite like it, I think, but... Well, one thing I was going to say, Michelar do some fantastic low and no beers. Their sort of 0.3% range is one of the best in the beers. So do check out those if you are avoidant or having a night sans cans. Well, so far, we've got 2 choices from Ed. We've got Vault City Brewing Cloudy Lemonade Session Sour. We've got Michelar Nitro Coffee IPA, 6.6%, I believe. Before we head to your bottles, Ed, let's talk Tango 1 Delta. You are a type 1 diabetic. That obviously means you need to be aware of your intake of sugar and carbs, am I right?
Yes, correct. Yeah, absolutely.
How does alcohol play into that? Because from speaking to you outside of this, I know you drank as much as the next man as a student.
Mm-hmm.
What impact does alcohol have on that condition?
So, I mean, it also depends on the type of alcohol, which I think is partly why I tend to limit the beer intake, because it tends to be quite high in carbs and quite a high sugar content. But sometimes it's fine. Sometimes I can have a few pints of it and it just sort of maintains the blood sugar level, or quite often what happens is it spikes the blood sugar level and then it drops by itself. So you're sort of trying to regulate it when it goes high, but then you shouldn't have regulated it because then it'll drop later anyway. So it's a bit, beer can be a bit of a nightmare if you're drinking it all night. Whereas I've found personally for me, things like red wine, spirits, absolutely fine, as long as they're with sugar-free mixes, are sort of okay. Yeah, and then it's the next day as well has an impact if I'm sort of hungover. Because the liver, part of the reason why, you know, everyone's really hungry when they're hungover is because the liver is attempting to process the alcohol, like desperately trying to process all this alcohol, so it isn't doing its regular thing of releasing glucose into the bloodstream.
Is it really?
Yeah, so your glucose is low when you're hungover, so you're basically trying to do the job of the liver by eating all this food.
Right, because it can't do both at once.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fascinating. And that's obviously bad, isn't it? Because then the liver does eventually release glucose. Oh. Shall I have another pop at that? It's a good job this red wine's gone off. Does the liver eventually done then?
Well, I think you're just...
Oh. Ed, talk us through the liver.
I think it's just a bad idea because you don't want to overwork your liver, right?
God, no.
No, because they do run out of steam now and again. I think it definitely impacts me, but I've just found ways of making it more manageable because, like you say, I do like a drink.
And does it make recording Great British Menu difficult because you're sort of eating, what, 12 meals a day?
Sure.
Which isn't... I don't think that's advised for diabetics, is it?
Or anyone, really. I won't eat the whole thing all of the time, and I test my glucose a lot, and I'm sort of... I use a thing called a Dexcom, which is a constant glucose monitor, which feeds my results through to my phone, so I'm constantly aware of where I'm at and what I should be doing and the insulin I should be injecting and all of this. So I actually... It's sort of okay, Great British Menu. I do get through it, and I found that eating little and often is actually better than eating a huge meal and then trying to deal with the consequences.
Yes, very good point. I think that relates to probably quite a lot of things, isn't it? No one has ever said, you know, no nutritionist has ever said, oh, just have one enormous meal.
At the beginning of the week.
Yeah, like a snake. Fascinating insight there, Ed, not just into your condition, but into the workings of the liver and our old friend, glucose.
Oh, you said it.
Oh, well done. I did. I said Glenn Close the first time.
With much excitement, I can reveal that I have been able to navigate the contours of the pub time continuum, and via a portal beneath the optics, I have managed to travel back in time to interface with my past self. Greetings, I am Robin from the future. Come to tell you of the amazing achievements that will come your way if you continue on the path of pub going.
Oh, wow. Cool.
You could sound a bit more excited, but okay. You'll be thrilled to know that you currently co-host a podcast where famous guests come on to talk about their dream pubs.
What's a podcast?
It's like a radio show where people talk over each other on the internet. Sorry, are you still there? There might be a problem with the pub time continuum.
No, I'm still here. So, are you, like, really rich?
Well, it depends what you mean by rich.
Well, I was about to apply for this really well-paid job, but if you think I should stay in the pub, then I'll get around it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's important to weigh these things up.
No, if you think I should stay in the pub to be on a podcast, then that's what I'll do.
Podcast!
Whatever, man. Cheers.
Cheers, I think. Mission successful. Mission achieved. Really good. Yeah. Happy with that.
What are your two bottles and or cans?
Well, they're not going to be cans, I'll tell you that much.
Indeed.
This was the hardest one because I do like wine, but there's so much wine. Did you guys know this? There's over 100 wines.
If you could tell my local Tesco that, it would really help me out because they seem to think there are only two wines, that there's Casilliero del Diablo and Yellowfoot, or whatever it's called.
But you do insist on keeping on buying them, John. So,
Well, they're so bloody tasty.
So if I have a bottle of wine I really like, I'll be like, well, that's delicious. But then I get really excited about all the different other wines I could try. So I'm not like tasting a wine I like and then buying loads of bottles of it and only drinking that wine. So I've had some really nice, exciting bottles. And also, we can have this argument now as well, John, if you want. I got quite into natural wine a few years ago.
Absolute feces. Complete, one of the worst alcohol-based experiences of my life.
I'm interested to have this chat because I had an interesting experience with natural wine recently where, and it reminded me of, so my girlfriend and I went to St. John, the restaurant, recently. Have you, and
fantastic restaurant.
It is fantastic. And you know their most famous dish is the bone marrow on toast.
Parsley salad. And
yeah. So we were eating that and, you know, it's been built up so much, like Anthony Bourdain, like, got down on his knees in the kitchen and said it's the best meal he'd ever had. So the expectations are incredibly high.
Yeah.
And you're eating it and you're just going, oh God, yeah, that's good, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. It's subtle, isn't it? Yeah, it's very subtle. And like after half an hour, we just realised, actually, I didn't like it. I couldn't taste anything.
Right, okay.
And we had the same thing with natural wine where it was like, we went to a place and bought a bottle of natural wine and we've kind of convinced ourselves we were enjoying it until the bus home when we both realised we like absolutely hated it. Right. And it didn't taste of anything.
It's obviously a hugely broad term. It's like saying what it's like yes. saying wine. Like
yeah. Yeah.
And I think the term natural is debated hugely. Like what does it actually mean? Because there's plenty of like historic wines that are made within a process that you would call natural. It doesn't use any of those processes that are unnatural, like the filtration and all of that stuff. But I think what John didn't enjoy was it's almost the sort of new wine movement of natural wine being a bit like craft beer, where the labels are quite fancy and there's no filtration. And then you can buy a bottle that sort of tastes quite farmyardy. It's a bit like a farmyard floor.
Well, I went to the wine shop you recommended, which I'm happy to mention because I had no problem with the wine shop. Was it called Forest Wines? No,
that is a fantastic wine shop. I'm not sure that's the one I recommended, but it is quite near me.
The other one was down the road from Forest Wines, actually, because they're both weirdly quite close to... They're sort of both quite near to each other, aren't they?
So there's Forest Wines and there's Gnarly Vines.
Gnarly Vines,
yeah,
that
yeah,
was it.
Yeah.
So I went in and the guy recognized me because I think he's a comedy fan, and I said, oh, Ed Gamble told me about this place, and he's like, oh, I know Ed's been in before, I'm gonna sort you out. He was really excited, and yeah. I was like, great, someone's gonna sort of talk me through the world of natural wine. And I got three bottles that he recommended, and like you say, they all have such cool labels that you sort of think you're gonna have a Willy Wonka-esque wine experience, as if there's some secret perfect wine that they've suddenly cracked the code to, and all these people who've been making wine for 4,000 years have just like been getting it wrong. And I got them home and they just all tasted like gone off wine. They just all tasted sour and vinegary. One of them tasted like dry sherry, which I'm not a fan of dry sherry. And I know certain people have the palate, so I hate Negronis. I hate Aperol. I don't like that sort of bitter.
Yeah.
Even though I have been known to drink actual vinegar because I like astringent savoury food so much. But something about the sort of mixture...
Quite an odd
of...
detail there.
I was just going to leave that, Robin. Yeah. But you...
but something like you're right. Something about the earthy... The word manure's not far from my mouth. And that might be a tasting note. But they were sort of like vinegar and manure.
I'm not sure manure is a tasting note that's broadly used. Farmyard. I said farmyard already. Yeah.
I went to it was a beer and cheese pairing evening once, which was really good fun. And the guy, it was basically each course that came out was slightly more challenging than the last one. And it got to the stage where he kept going on about these farmyardy flavors, and so I was like, I was very. Almost like dungy, isn't it? He goes, yeah, but that's good. That's natural, isn't it? It's like, I just wanted to say, like, if you like shit, just admit it. If you like eating poo.
Yeah, I was sort of, I couldn't believe, you know, I can believe someone likes a Negroni. I get it. I can't actually believe anyone would drink that wine I tasted and say they liked it, in all honesty.
And the weird thing is, I remember one of the bottles you bought because it's from Octavin, who are a fantastic producer, and they'd have to, I think the label, if you remember it, was the one with like one of the seven dwarves on it. And I think you brought the one where it's like colour in your own label thing. I nearly put a bottle of theirs on my bottle list, which is the Hip Hip Girard Octavin, which is their Chardonnay, which is fantastic.
I've actually got, because I sent you pictures of the ones I bought.
Yeah, all followed with a text going, that went down the sink.
There was one called Brand.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
Oh, no, hang on. Oh, yeah, there's one called, yeah, it was, it's called the, I can't read the writing, but it is a picture of a dwarf with painting by numbers.
Yes,
things.
Yeah, that's an Octavin one, and yeah, I think that producer is fantastic, and I've since had that bottle, and it is very nice. But I think, yeah, it's different tastes, and I think there is that sherry note's good, and dry cider as well. I think there's that taste to a lot of it as well. But I've not really picked any natural wine.
Well, I'm glad.
Even though it's now, you know, the sun's come out, it's the season for orange wine. It's the season for orange wine, guys. Don't pick up your drinks and look at me like that.
What does orange wine mean?
Like wine with a fair amount of skin contact. So, yeah, it's white wine with skin contact.
So you pour it on yourself, yeah. And then you sort of absorb it through your pores.
Yeah, exactly. You have a big bath of it. So there's some amazing people who make that. Some really good Slovakian orange wine I had recently, actually. This is all the sort of stuff I said to myself before I recorded this. Don't say that, Ed. You're going to sound boring.
Well, no, I think it's really interesting. And I also, like, the way I looked on craft beer when it first kicked off was like, it all tastes of lemon peel. I'm not interested. Mm-hmm. What's wrong with real ale? And now if you looked in my fridge, you know, it's 90% what you would have called craft beer. And I think they have, what they've done is, you're sort of, because it's now much more popular, you're able to find your niche. So I still don't like aggressively hoppy, like double, triple hopped IPAs, and I never will, but that's not what craft beer is. That's just an element of craft beer.
Yeah. I mean, one of the bottles I was going to pick, but I think Nish picked it on his episode, which I guess was one of your first episodes, right?
The first, I think.
Yeah, was Little Bastard, which is Staffelterhof wine, which is fantastic, and they make a lot of amazing stuff, other wines as well. But I've not picked that for the same reason I've not picked Guinness, because I don't want to seem like I'm copying anyone.
Well, let's give us both barrels. What are your two bottles?
Two bottles. First bottle is the bottle that I had on Great British Menu, which is it's a bottle of Margaux. It's a Chateau Cantenac Brown Margaux. I think it was 2014 was the bottle that we had on Great British Menu, but I after that, for Christmas, I bought myself a bottle, and it was 2008, and that was even better.
So are we going for the 2008?
Let's go for the 2008.
And it's just so I can look this up in my mind, it's a Margaux, M-A-R-G-O-T.
No, M-A-R-G-A-U-X.
Ah.
What's the word brown doing in there? Sorry. Is it?
I've done a little bit of research when I was buying that. I think he was Scottish. It was, the chateau was maybe bought in by or established by a Scottish man in Bordeaux, you know, centuries ago or decades ago, one of the two. So I think he was called Brown.
Oh, right, okay.
Brown.
So it's nothing to do with the colour of the wine.
No. It's red.
So it's got a gold label with a big sort of manor house chateau on the front. And it's expensive. It's not like insane. It's 57. Average price is 57. So it is very expensive.
Oh,
but
I mean, it's too expensive to drink regularly.
Yeah, but for a special occasion, it's not like a sort of, you're not getting into silly wine prices. It's not like 150 quid or whatever.
No, which you can do with all the, I mean, I know minimal stuff about wine and I know minimal stuff about French wine, but Bordeaux is like the region, right? So you can, with some of those places like Chateau Margaux and then places like Chateau Latour, and it's insane prices, especially bottles with a bit of age on them are like over a grand. And you just think the only reason anyone's buying that is to show off.
Well, you're paying for rarity.
You're paying for rarity. You're paying for the age. You're paying for the name.
And you're paying to, you know, pop it on your shelf so that when people come around, they can see you've got a bottle of Pine Ridge Vineyards Cabernet Sauvignon Stag's Leap District 2013.
Oh, mama. Was that, that's the similar to the one we had in New York?
It is the bottle that we had in New York.
Is it the bottle?
That's the bottle.
Oh,
right there,
gosh.
That you can see here in the moon underwater. I took it back in my luggage because the wine tasted so great. And I loved the story of our friend James Acaster buying it when he walked into an off-licence in his mittens and his woolly hat, and they were snooty to him, so he just picked the most expensive wine they had.
I've never known anyone to spend so much money in anger.
Yeah. But what a wine that was.
It was
Holy
incredible. Yeah, I nearly picked that or something similar. I do like Californian Cabernet Sauvignon is amazing, but so punchy.
So we've got the Margaux Chateau Cantenac Brown 2008 from Ed, which I would really like to taste, actually.
Well, if we'd done a live one, I would have, you know, done something stupid like buy a bottle.
How strong is it? It doesn't matter, John. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter with wine, certainly, does it?
Doesn't matter with wine. Well, you say that. Every so often, I'll be browsing wines in a shop. And if I've got to choose between two, and one's 12 and a half and one's 15 and a half, I tend to go for the 12 and a half.
It always depends what I'm eating with it, if I am eating with it. The good thing about a lot of the natural wines is they're sort of 10%, 11%, and you can just drink them on a summer's day and not really worry about what you're eating with them. You can just neck them. Would you like to know my second bottle?
Yes, please.
This I'm sort of playing to the crowd here with John. I'm picking a Riesling.
Ooh.
Yes.
And I'm picking... It's one of the best drinks I've ever had, ever. So my friend Freddie, who is a wine buyer, he occasionally lets me just have some nice wines. If I go for dinner with him, he's like, I've got this wine from work. And it's a JJ Prum Riesling. And the one we had was 1990.
Whoa.
Which is ages ago.
Holy Moses. And is that a sweet or a dry or an off-dry Riesling?
It was towards the sweet, so it's...
God.
It's Auslesser, which...
I love Auslesser!
Which I think it's when they're picked, right? It's when the grapes are picked. So it's whether there's noble rot and all of that sort of stuff.
I love how long the names are on Rieslings. So when I move over to just to the Wine Hall of Fame here at the Moon Underwater, there's seven bottles now on the Wine Hall of Fame. My favourite name is the Weingut Maxford Richter Mulheim an der Mosel Grascher Himmelrich Riesling Cabinet.
Lovely.
It sounds like Album of the Year in The Wire or something.
So tell me about this Riesling, Ed. What did you eat it with and what did it do to you?
Well, we were sort of having many bottles.
God.
We were trying lots of different bottles. But we did. We were at 10 Greek Street, which is a really nice restaurant in there.
And he brought his own bottles?
Well, there were some bottles knocking around, you know. He's a good guy. I'm sure you've met Freddie, haven't you? Or he sent you some stuff
corresponded.
From the Wine Society. Which is... The Wine Society is amazing.
Yeah. It's really good stuff.
Like a co-op company. You buy shares in them and then they send you great emails going, this is nice. And you go, oh, it looks nice. I'm going to buy that. I've just described every company.
Do you know how much a bottle of the JJ Prum 1990 Riesling Ausschluss is?
I do not know. It's probably insane. And because the thing with Riesling is if you buy it now when it's made, you have to store it until you're about 70.
Yeah. Well, it's about 200 quid. It's 2 gallons, mate.
Yeah, well, I'm obviously never buying that, so this is a dream pub, right?
Yeah, but now I want to buy it.
what does the age do with the Riesling? The age of Riesling, is it does it make it sweeter?
Yeah, I guess it makes it sweeter. It lets it develop and all of that. And it can just last a long time because I think the amount of residual sugar in Riesling, as far as I know, means that it can just sit for ages.
So it's a good one for storing, where not all wines are they? Because
no, I mean, yeah. If you have, I don't have any storage capabilities. Otherwise, I'd have too much wine. I'm now on a one in one out policy in our house.
Very, very few wines that I or you, Robin, will come into contact with in our lives benefit from storing. However, I think some Rieslings do sort of that their flavor profile, because there's so much flavor in especially a sweet Riesling, those flavor profiles change over the years. But the chances of me sitting in the same room as a bottle of nice Riesling for more than, I'm going to say, 36 hours, I just wouldn't be able to.
And I'm not sure 36 hours will make that much difference.
No.
To the flavor. But the good thing about, like, it's, I don't really like overly sweet wines, but actually I'm getting more into them. But the thing with good Riesling, I've found, is that there's a balance of acidity that you get it at the back of the tongue, like you would do with an acidic wine, but then you've got that amazing sweetness as well. And it's, oh my God, it's so good.
Yeah, you don't want one that's just very, because you can get with cheaper, sweeter Rieslings, they're very sort of syrupy.
Mm. Mm.
But I like that. I like the Tokais and things, you know.
Okay, that's almost, so that's like, sort of like dessert wine.
Yeah, that's almost like honey-like. I love that. I'd much, you know, I really like, I like those more than I like Riesling.
A great balanced Riesling will have like sweetness immediately, and then it's almost like it washes that sweetness out of your mouth with just a really refreshing
citrus and yes, acidity, and it's really good.
Well, we're starting to sound like complete plums, but
I'm starting to sound like myself.
I actually want to try all of your choices thus far.
Oh, that's a pretty good going.
I'm so pleased to be surprised and enlivened and enriched by your choices, Ed. But speaking of enlivening and enriching us by our choices, we now head over to the Moon Underwater pub quiz with the lovely Robin Allender.
Okay, everybody, pens out, eyes down, it's time for the quiz. Played for Zimbabwe, but he was born in South Africa. I know Alaska is bigger. That wasn't the question. Put your phone away. Right, Michael Jackson's Funky Monkey has been deducted 5 points. Thanks, John. Welcome to this week's Moon Underwater Pub Quiz. And we all like money, but do we all like knowing facts about when certain financial services were introduced?
Yes!
Let's find out. So it's a quiz about money or financial services of one kind or another. So question one, and we'll go with the three questions, we'll do the answers in part two. Question one is, when was Chip and Pin introduced in the UK? When was our Pip and Chin introduced in the UK? Question two, when was the first plastic credit card introduced worldwide? That's not UK. Question three, this is quite, maybe a bit too up John Street. Question three, when were ISAs introduced and what was the original cash limit? That's my financial quiz. Any repeats?
Can we just repeat the whole quiz but a different topic?
Yeah. They're all years, so it's kind of closest to the years. So Chip and Pin, first plastic credit card and ISAs.
This is good stuff, man. I've just begun to throw out the records of my first ever ISA.
Oh.
So because I just came to terms with the fact that, you know, no need to have kept details of an ISA that's been closed for a decade.
Yeah.
But does that give you a clue on when ISAs were introduced? Did you have the first ever ISA?
I don't think I did have the first, but I certainly wasn't.
Wouldn't put it past you.
Yeah.
I wasn't able to have like one of the child's Tessas and Peps when they were around. So, it's good stuff, man. I want to drink one of these wines and think about these cues until the day I pop off this mortal coil. Okay, this is good stuff. Right, folks, you leave me in a financial reverie and you leave me dreaming of a J.J. Prum 1990 Riesling. Oh, my lordy. And you leave me here with Ed Gamble and the lovely Robin Allender. But head with us into part two, where we enter the bright new horizon of a Patreon-only category, which Ed is yet to pick, but we will also be finding out what spirits, what wild card, what album Ed's going to pick in part two. So we will see you back then.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.